Stomach and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Studios, Bridgestone Arena. Predators tonight, 7 o'clock, right here against the Vegas Golden Knights. And the Predators going for points in 18 straight games. The franchise record is now behind the Predators, and it's all just open space in front. Barry Trotz joins us now, Predators general manager, presented by Gary Force Acura. So, Barry, I want to start on this. How do you keep this going for another month ahead of the playoffs? My goodness, you guys never lose anymore.
Well, I think, you know, it catches up with you because there is a standard and a commitment level and a focus level that, you know, will level off. You see, you start getting some of your defensemen chipped up a little bit here. Sure. In terms of the injuries, a couple guys went down. Those start to pile up a little bit, but I think Bruno's done a really good job with the leadership group on figuring out, you know, how much practice time, how much time off, how much guys get optionals, all that. It's really important at this time of year because you got some guys. You know, I talked to Ryan McDonough the other day, and he says he hadn't felt this good late in the year in quite some time, and he's had some long runs with Tampa Bay. So that's a really good sign when you get you know, older players that are as committed as they are, as Ryan is, and the way they play and blocking shots and play that heavy game that they're feeling good late in the season. So hopefully that continues right to the end here and then into the playoffs.
So when we talked to you last Tuesday, you guys were getting ready to play the Sharks, and I could tell how nervous you were knowing where the Sharks were in the standings, mm-hmm. knowing that Florida was ahead and then Detroit and then Vegas. And your team went out and won the game 8-2. You know, that was, I thought, a statement as much as anything else, saying like, hey, you know, this team is going to show up no matter who the opponent is and play to what you've said is the standard. But then Thursday came, a shutout on the road at Florida, defending Eastern Conference champions, a legitimate cup contender. What did that mean to you?
It meant a lot to me because I think when you look around the league, you look at teams like Florida, not only are they a very good team and a deep team, but they're a hard team. And sometimes they become the bullies. They push you out of games. And I like the fact we went into their den and we didn't let them push us around. I thought we played a really, really smart, hard game. And really, I never felt during that game, once you scored that first goal, that we're ever going to lose to the Florida Panthers. And they have a tremendous hockey team. I think there is as good a shot to win the Stanley Cup as anybody in the league. And that said a lot about our group, that they had good focus. It said a lot about our group that they can play in those hard environments mm-hmm. against teams that try to bully you a little bit. And I thought we did a really good job with our response. And a 3-0 shutout. And I thought, you know, Lanks and was outstanding that game. He made some really timely saves, which our goaltenders are making during the stretch. And I thought our team commitment for the 60 minutes was all there. So I was really proud of the group responding that way.
Did you feel like Saturday's game against Detroit was a playoff game? Because Detroit really needed that game, and they played like they needed that game. And then the fact that it wasn't your best night on Saturday, but at the end, Philip Forsberg finds a way to put the puck in the net. The goalie finds a way to play the way he played. Did it have playoff feels to you? What did Saturday mean?
Yeah, it really did. You know, one of the things that you have to remember, and I go into the coach's room after the game and sometimes, you know, say a couple words and sometimes listen, but teams that need the games, like Detroit needed that game. You look every night, the teams that need it, they are winning almost every night now because they are all in. They're playing playoff hockey. Detroit played a playoff game. So sometimes early in that game, I felt, you know, maybe this is our B game. But we're also getting their A game. So sometimes your A game and their A game makes your game look like a B game a little bit. So I thought early, but as the game went on, I thought we got to about the midpoint. We got a huge save from the juice and I thought from that point on, we got momentum, and then we slowly took the game over. In the third period, I thought we were by far the best team, and we deserved to win.
So I'm going to ask this question, and I have no idea what the answer is. where is the room to improve right now for the team? Because you're getting great goaltending, you're getting timely scoring with your secondary guys, your star players are playing like your star players, and you're not losing. So where is the room to improve?
Well, I think the special teams are still going to be a huge component in the playoffs. So our 5-on-5 game during the stretch, I would put it up against any team's 5-on-5 game in the National Hockey League. Where we've stumbled a little bit, but we have, you know, because our 5-on-5 game has been so strong, is being a little bit better on the power play and the penalty kill. Power play more so on the entries. Once we get in zone, I think we can create enough. But our entries, we just got to be a little more precise and a little more, I'll just say, efficient. And then on the penalty kill, just we're going to have to find ways to go long stretches without giving up a goal. And we haven't been able to do that, but we have been able to kill off the really, really game-changing penalties late in games,
yep.
Late in periods. So that's the most important thing. But if we can have that ability to go, you know, if they got a penalty kill, it gets into the power plays back in their mind that they're going to really have trouble scoring, then I'd love to have that component in. And then, obviously our third periods and our ways to find the victory at the end has been really impressive to me.
Barry Trotz is with us, presented by Gary Force Acura. According to MoneyPuck.com, you guys have a 99.6% chance of making the playoffs, which, by the way, a lot apparently can change in a month. And I ask this question because is there a fear of locking up a playoff spot too soon, knowing that, like tonight, you're playing the defending cup champions, and this could be a playoff preview kind of game. And then, obviously, on when the Bruins come to town, that's a team that is a playoff caliber team. And is there a fear, though, that at the end of this, that you may not have the gas full throttle because of the fact that you guys essentially locked up a playoff spot or are trending in that direction?
No, I think this is a part of the year when you're down to your last 10 or 11 games where if we still need the points. We're not in the playoffs. There's still a chance. I mean, we've got to, win some more hockey games and get in the playoffs. But I think we're close enough to the end where you know what your game is. It's not going away. I think, from my experience, when I had some teams that won President's Trophies, we were 30 points ahead of teams. We didn't play a meaningful game for 2 months. And those were the teams that maybe had the most talent but really struggled to get by that. We got by the first round, but it was really difficult, and it got harder and harder. And I think that's sort of what the Bruins ran into last year, is they got a team that, in Florida, a very good team that was playing playoff hockey and was used to that, and they hadn't played a meaningful game in a long, long time. And that was the edge. It's the mental edge that comes with that, because the Florida was like, no pressure. We're going to leave our best game out there. And Boston, everybody expected them to win, and I was in that situation, and I could feel it, and it's very difficult. So, but I think we're close enough to the end where if we can be healthy and ready, which we will be, but we got to get there first, and hopefully if we can stay healthy, we'll have our best game, and if our best game is good enough to win the first series, then that would be great.
So one thing I felt, Barry, is ever since that Dallas game, every single night, except for the Montreal game you guys lost in overtime, I feel like this team has taken the ice almost afraid to lose. Like, or just every period, it's like they're scared to death of losing and they play like it. They play desperate. Like, they have to win that. And there's no like, oh, okay, we lose today and then we get ready, go play out Thursday, go on the road. There's none of that. And I wonder where that comes from and how they've been able to keep it up. I understand at the beginning of this when Roman Josi's saying, hey, our season is on Saturday at St. Louis. That's one thing. But, like, every other game this stretch hasn't been that, and yet they play that way. What is that?
I think it's joy. I think the group found joy in competing every night and preparing to compete and then performing on the ice. Because I go downstairs, in the mornings and check on things there and what have you. And when teams are pushing and there's pressure, it's usually quiet. And you could just feel the tension, you know. And this group is loose. They're having fun. They understand that there's a standard, I guess, and they've accepted that standard. They haven't fought that standard, which is the reason I think that they're having fun and winning is because they've accepted that standard, and they go, you know what? We put the work in. It's fun. Competing's fun. Mm-hmm. Winning's fun. And nothing other than that, they're just playing hockey, and they're playing for each other.
Barry Trotz is with us. How much of the success in year one has changed your overall plans for the team? I joked to you before you sat down, and I said, think about the conversations we were having a year ago. Think about the conversations we were having 2 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how much has that changed the big picture? You know, you still got the prospects and all the draft picks and the cap space and everything else, but seeing what you're seeing and knowing that this team is a cup contender this year, which I didn't expect going into the season, how has that kind of changed, or has it changed anything?
Well, it hasn't changed. I mean, I like I said, when we came here and we sort of 5-10 to start the year, I was saying, like, this, you got to be able to stomach this. You got to have the spine to do it. And we may be a top five pick, but we got an opportunity maybe to get, you know, a young centerman like Celebrini, who would probably go number one. He will go number one. He's the best player. No question. So we might have been in that conversation, and everything's changed. But the development of our players, what this whole process has done for us is we've maintained a standard and a culture that we always wanted to create and have. Two, it's allowed our prospects to get more time in the minors, mm-hmm. and have success. And you saw the, you know, Milwaukee having a 15-game, you know, unbeaten streak and doing the things they are. They're first place.
15 games. Yeah. It's 18 games around here.
And so they're playing important minutes, important roles. You know, we were saying, you know, we'll get through the, you know, the trade deadline, and we might be sellers, and then all these kids will be up, and they're going to have to learn under fire and see how they do. You know, the group did a really good job last year. But it still hasn't changed. Like, next year might be a more difficult year than this year, because I expect us to have some young people in here full-time. Like, Parsonen should be here, and Tomasino should be here, and Igor Afanasyev should be here. And then, you know, you look at Stastny and Delgazzo, and then we have one of the best defensemen we have playing right now and has had a wonderful year is Willsby. He's probably next in line, and then you start adding those things in. So we could be actually a lot younger team next year. Doesn't mean we're going to be a better team, but at the same time, we've got some great pieces that we've already established here. Got a great culture, we've got great leadership, we've got good goaltending, and we got, you know, a really good situation, so we're moving forward. But at the same time, it might not go as smoothly as this year has gone, especially on the back end.
Barry Trotz is with us, presented by Gary Force Acura. So I don't want to speak for you, but I did speak for you in this regard, which is, like, I know my job, like, I know my industry, mm-hmm. and I know how much fans love talking about player acquisition, trade deadlines, drafts, draft picks. And yet, sometimes I think as sports fans, no matter what sport it is, we leave out the idea, we get so obsessed with player acquisition that we don't spend enough time being concerned about player development or factoring in player development. And yet I look across the roster, I didn't know if Jeremy Lauzon belonged in the NHL a couple years ago. And then when he got hurt, I said to myself, what are they going to do without him? And I see, you know, whether it's Jankowski or Sherwood or Evangelista and the strides he's made, and even guys that are well-established players, that are veteran players, that might be playing better than we're used to seeing them play. When you look at the coach and the player development as a former coach, what is he doing that has been so successful with making these players so much better throughout the course of the season?
Well, I think you look at let's start with accountability. Like, he has almost everybody who's sat on our hockey team, there's been, you know, when Trenny was a big piece here, on the herd line, you know, and then he's been a big piece in terms of our physical part of our game and all that. You know, he sat out. He wasn't producing, wasn't playing to the standard that we expected for him, because his ceiling is here, and different players have different ceilings and expectations and roles. You've seen guy like Kiefer Sherwood been out. Jankowski's been sat. Glass has been sat. I can go up and down. Tomasino, all these guys.
Sure.
Really, the only guys that haven't really been sat, I would say, is probably your number one line, Roman Josi, Colton Sissons, and after that, it's, you know, almost everybody's had a sit-down, which is hard to do in as a coach in the National Hockey League. There is egos, there's pressure from management to, hey, you got to play this guy because he makes this amount of money. I've never put that pressure on our coach, and I think that our players and the understand that I'm aligned with Bruno. They understand that I've coached, and I understand that process, that everybody's human, and so there's nothing personal when you're out of the lineup. You just got to get prepared, be a pro, and when you do get the opportunity to get back in the lineup, and a good example is Kiefer Sherwood. He sat for, God, probably seemed like about 6 weeks, it seems like, and then he got back in, and you know, right now it looks like he's not going to give his spot up unless something happens in terms of injury.
Mm-hmm. You know, last week you were at the general manager meetings, and I asked you a question about what the other general managers say to you. But I was thinking about this, which is a lot of general managers are kind of developed, like, as, and this sounds crazy, but they're kind of developed like personnel departments and assistant GMs and scouting and things like that. You're a coach. And I wonder if your success in the first year as a general manager is going to change how organizations operate at the top with bringing in a coach to be the general manager. Was there any talk of that at the GM meetings, or what about it has made this so it's almost so seamless for you stepping into this role?
Well, I think number one, there was never any talk of that. I think I got so much to learn. I've been freelancing a lot here. But I've surrounded, you know, I've had good mentors. Let's just call it what it is. We have one of the best general managers ever managed in the league in David Poile, and I had a lot of time with David, and he's such a good mentor even to this day. But I'm surrounded with people who've been mentored by David, and you know, Scott Nickel, Brian Poile, Jeff Kelty, and I think I've come in with some new ideas based on my experiences with other teams. And what I know around the league, and we're trying to, I think, implement some of that stuff. So it's been a really good format for everybody to, you know, have a say and where we want to go. I think ownership has been unbelievable in the vision of, you know, Bill Haslam, who's going to be taking over from Herb Fritch. I think it's going to be a great transition. You know, and you see sometimes when there's transition from ownership, and we've had a few in this town, as you know, they don't always go as smoothly as I see the Herb and Bill are working seamlessly. It's really quite special how that's happened, and I think that's because Herb is such a community guy, but he's a fan. He understands that this is an important part of our fabric of the community, and so the transition seems like it's been wonderful, and I think the vision of ownership is not only this year or next year, but 30 years down the road.
What do you think it says about David, the fact that this team, you know, you step in here, and the team with a lot of players that he brought and drafted and traded for and things like that have really stepped up, you know, this year, and I've always said this, GMing, coaching is a one-year thing. It's a right here, right now kind of thing. GMing is more of a 3-4-year, 5-year thing. And so even though you're the GM of this team and they're having success, there is a lot of this that is, you know, that are David's guys or guys he brought in or things like that. And kind of what is, you know, when you look at your role, how much of an impact David's had on you this year, even though he's off to the side?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I mean, David, this is still David's team. I mean, he's majority of the guys, other than the free agent guys and a couple guys that we brought in this year. This is pretty well Predator David Poile 2.0 now. Mm-hmm. But we've added some players because we've deleted some players too. So I think, you know, the whole thing is there's been a certain, like I say, a standard in the way we've done things. I think they've been terrific, but there's other opportunities that we look at and ways to fill in some holes, different ways of thinking. So, you know, not all of them have come to fruition for me. You know, I think in terms of some of the values of players, I know I frustrate some of the agents because I don't talk GM talk. I talk coach talk to them, and you know I will say, hey, you know, if they say my player's comp is this guy, and I'll go, he's not even close. I mean, what do you think? I said I can tell you, I coached. That's not even close for me, and I refuse to pay for other people's mistakes. And I've said that, and I'm going to make my own mistakes, so I'll pay for my own, but I'm not going to pay for other people's mistakes when it comes to comparables and stuff like that. So probably have a little different approach than...
But how much has David kind of walked you through those things so that you're not blindsided by something you're not expecting?
He does a pretty good job. I'll ask him, I'll say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about this and that. And he said, you know, just... You know, you have your whatever you believe in and whatever your price is and whatever you look, but you can't get blinded by the short-term vision. You know, sometimes you're going to get pulled and you're going to want something, and you've got to be disciplined sometimes and just sometimes walk away if you have to. And I've taken that to heart, and I have. I've walked away, and I'm not too, you know, this is my price. This is what I'm willing to pay, and if it doesn't work, then it was good knowing you, and we'll move on. We'll find something else. So I think that's probably more of the coach in me than the GM.
So 3 more weeks left in the season. I will say this, and I don't keep up with every other team. I hate when it comes to, like, league awards and asking what I think about them, because I don't keep up with other teams like I keep with the Bears. I think there's a pretty good chance in your first year you might win the General Manager of the Year award.
Oh, I don't know about that. I hope not. I would rather see Roman Yossi win the MVP or the Norris Trophy, because he's the guy that gets it done night in and night out. There's too many general managers that have done some wonderful things with their team, so I'm just... that will be something that I'd rather have the team award or someone else win it than me.
I'm just saying, I don't think any of these other teams thought, maybe Philadelphia, I'm not sure any of these other teams thought they were rebuilding and all of a sudden have a 99.6% chance of making the playoffs and are dispatching playoff teams left and right the way you guys have.
Well, maybe I look at it.
He wants me to stop talking. I can see it right here.
Yes, I would like that. I look at it. I sort of joke around. I said I was trying to, start a rebuild here or retool or whatever.
Re-something.
And I haven't done a very good job of that. But at the same time, the success of our team is it all goes to the players. It goes to Bruno. It goes to the fans who come in and get us through the third period. The standing O. Like, how are we going to lose a game when you're given a standing O in the last 6 minutes? I mean, I've been behind the bench. I've heard those players. They talk like that. They're like, we're not losing this game now. And so the fans have a really big impact, especially in that last time out, especially in the games. You saw the commitment in that game. You know, I look at the Detroit game as a good example. Playoff-style game. There wasn't much in terms of inches. Tight game all the way through. We got, you know, a couple things. We got some big saves when we needed it. We got a relentless goal to get ahead. Mm-hmm. And then we had unbelievable commitment at the end. And with the fans rallying behind us in the last TV timeout, you're not going to lose very many games. I'm just telling you, because there is a full commitment when it comes to blocking shots, making sure that we get the result we need.
Barry Trotz says, give no credit to Barry Trotz, according to Barry Trotz. Barry Trotz is presented by Gary Force Acura. Barry, congratulations on the run that you guys have had, setting a franchise record. You look to do it tonight. Good luck on that. And, of course, good luck and good – oh, one last question. Lazan playing tonight?
Yes, he is.
Okay, Lazan's in tonight. We got that. And good luck the rest of the way, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Barry Trotz, as always, Stillman & Company. We'll roll along with your phones at 615-737-1025. 1025, 106 for the game. The Barry Trotz interview has become less newsworthy and I think probably more informative, if that makes any sense. Now that the trade deadline's over, we're not talking about acquisitions here or there, but really kind of the thought process behind the team. And so the only news item from Barry Trotz on our program was Jeremy Lazan is in tonight, and thank goodness, because Lazan under Andrew Burnett has become a player. Now, I have to tell you the business side of this when it comes to the Barry Trotz interviews, and I think everybody needs to hear this. We're going to have to go right back to commercial because we spent too much time talking to Barry Trotz. But, Ian, I do think that the people much rather hear more Barry Trotz and less of Jared.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I think there's something to that. Also, what did you think of Barry when I said that I think he might win General Manager of the Year?
Yeah, typical coach doesn't like talking about himself.
I'm dead serious. Is there any other candidate?
For GM of the Year?
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Who, Philly?
Maybe.
I don't even know who Philly's GM is.
I don't either. You know, I don't know. Maybe Tortorella might get more credit than the GM there. You know, usually they give it to the teams who have the best record. So, I don't know.
Well, it's GM of the year. It's not GM of the last however many years. So, if you're Florida, you don't get credit for all the things you did over the last couple of
years. No, I meant this, you know, for the team who has the best record.
I think you should give it to Barry Trotz. That's so, just me.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Predators, there is one thing that's really on the table now, and it is seeding. And I have my thoughts on that. I want to get to that next, and then we're right to your phone. 615-737-1025. Say goodbye to busted brackets with my official sportsbook app, FanDuel. Because FanDuel lets you bet on every game of the tournament. Whether you're betting on a big upset or a one seed, it's time to go dancing on America's number one sportsbook. Because right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bet if your first $5 bet wins. So you got all the games on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Who is going to make it to the Final Four? We will find out this weekend, and that is the perfect time again to get those $200 from my friends at FanDuel. That's $200 on point spreads, money lines, and you can even pick who's going to win it all. UConn. Just visit FanDuel.com/JGM and bet on college hoops until they cut down the nets. 21 and over in present Tennessee. First online real money wager, only $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.
Saturday was a little bit of a slow start. Then like that, how do you
kind of hold that? I think learn a little bit. You know, I think twofold. Detroit, we're desperate. We're going to play a desperate team tonight. So I think learn a little bit from last game. And there's a lot of good things in the Detroit game. I just think a little bit sloppy with the puck early. And tonight will be another big challenge for us.
There you go. That was Andrew Burnett talking about tonight. Hey, this is going to be a big one. So I don't think this is a big game. The Predators, according to MoneyPuck.com, have a 99.6% chance of making the playoffs. This team's making the playoffs. Ian, what would the old man say?
Just get me to the playoffs, baby.
Get me to the playoffs, baby! But there is one really important thing that is at stake, not necessarily tonight, but over the next 3 weeks, and that's seeding. And it doesn't mean that there isn't anything to play for, because there is. And they have to continue to play their tushes off every night in order to keep the intensity up so that they can improve as a group and all of that. But what really matters to me is seeding. Because as far as I'm concerned, all I care about is the Nashville Predators winning the Stanley Cup. That's all I care about. So if you told me that the worst team in the East that makes the playoffs, Philly?
Detroit. Philly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You tell me one of those two teams makes it out, good. You know, that's what I would be rooting for. So I don't care about any other things. I don't care about it. There's no extracurriculars I care about. I want the Predators to win a cup. So here's what I think has to happen. Number one, I do not want to play Edmonton. That is the first thing. I'm not going to say you have no chance to beat Edmonton, but I don't think you have a very good chance of beating Edmonton. Other than that, I think you can beat some of these teams. Which is why I'm rooting like crazy for one of two things to happen. The first would be that the Predators catch Winnipeg. Now, it's not very likely that they're going to catch Winnipeg, but in theory, the Predators, if they continue to stay hot and Winnipeg drops a couple, the Predators could, in theory, catch Winnipeg and thus would be put into the Central Division, which means that they would avoid Edmonton until, if they get there, the conference final. And then at that point, like, if you have to play Edmonton, you have to play Edmonton, and we, you know, accept it. You know, then it's fine, whatever, that's okay. Now, MoneyPuck.com has the Predators on pace for 102 points, Winnipeg on pace for, I believe, 107 points, and so it's not very likely you're going to catch them. As of right now, you sit 5 points back, although you've both played 71 games. The second thing that I think you want to do is I think you want to root for the Vancouver Canucks to take home the number one seed in the Western Conference, and thus, as the number one wild card, you would draw into the Central Division. And that does two things, because these are the two things that I think really matter. I think the two things that really matter, number one, avoid Edmonton. That's the number one thing. You match up terribly against Edmonton. McDavid and Draisaitl score 45 goals every time they play the Predators. I know Edmonton never wins in the playoffs. I don't care. I don't want to play Edmonton. That's the first thing. And second, you would avoid the West Coast travel. And this is really important, because in 2017, one thing the Predators had was there was one flight to Chicago and one flight back to Nashville. What is a flight to Chicago? 1 hour? So it was a 1 hour flight each way, done. St. Louis, like an hour and a half. I flew that flight. One flight there, one flight back. One flight there, one flight back, series over. And then they had to go to Anaheim. And by the time you get to the conference final, everybody's tired. But in 2016, the Predators ended up in the Pacific. And they went seven games with Anaheim. And so that was flying to Anaheim, flying back. Flying back to Anaheim, flying back, and flying back to Anaheim. Then they went to San Jose. And then they flew back to Nashville. Then back to San Jose. Then back to Nashville and back to San Jose. And by the end of that, they were dead. They were dead. Like, they had no gas left in the tank. And I don't want the Predators to be in that spot. So if they draw in to Vancouver, say Vancouver ends up as the number two seed, and whoever wins this division, Colorado or Dallas, is number one, then you're going to be flying to Vancouver and flying back, and then flying back to Vancouver and then flying back, and then flying to Edmonton and then flying. And I don't want any of that. So as far as the rest of the season is concerned, seeding matters. These games matter, because if you win and you win enough in Edmonton and Winnipeg loses enough, you can stay in the Central Division, which means no travel, and it means no Edmonton. Those are the two things I care about. 615-737-1025. Your phones are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. A lot of love on the text line for Barry Trotz. Jared, I look forward to the Barry Trotz interview as much as anyone on your show. Thank you for asking the pointed questions of what we as the fans want to know. Trotz is the best interview and a breath of fresh air after all the coach talk we've had to endure for years. Let me tell you something. Coach talk happens everywhere. Now, I'm going to say this about David. I thought David was more candid than your typical coach or general manager or everything else. Andrew says, Jared, this might be a bad take, but if the Predators manage to get past the first round, is it reasonable to think that that might be the toughest Western Conference opponent that they would face until a potential Stanley Cup matchup? Again, I don't want to play Edmonton. That's the team that I don't want to play. I know that we always look at who wins and say, okay, this team's good or this team's bad or things like that. But it's like every coach will tell you about the NCAA basketball tournament. Matchups matter. You know, one team is a good rebounding team, but they don't shoot the ball well. So against a team that does shoot it well, like, that's a problem. It's a bad matchup. And Edmonton is a bad matchup for the Predators. I will never believe that the Predators could beat that team in seven games until I actually see it. I talk about you guys and about how, you know, if you can't look at this team and see that this team is a Stanley Cup contender, I mean, every time I'm sitting here, I look up at the TV at NHL Network, they're always talking about the Predators. NHL Network never talks about the Predators. And now they're always talking about them. They're a Cup contender. And I said, if you can't see that they are a Cup contender until they put that cup over their heads, I'm like, guys, I think you're living kind of a miserable existence. But that is how I feel about Edmonton, because I've seen the Predators play Edmonton about 100 times in my life, and I think I've seen them win three times. One texter says the Oilers always blow it come playoff time. Nah, I don't see them blow it against you. I will say this. Every time I watch Edmonton play and they beat the Predators 7-2, I always walk away from that and say, how does this team not win the cup every year with the players they have on that team and how well they play against the Predators? But I want nothing to do with Edmonton. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Preds game day against the defending cup champions is next. Stillman & Company, 1025-106 for the game. Predators Game Day is presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, online at tjandersonhomes.com. TJ Anderson, get your house seen, heard, and sold. TJ's my realtor. He'll do the same for you. The Nashville Predators at 42-25-4. That's good for 88 points. They have points in 17 straight performances. How unbelievable is that? They go for 18 tonight when they host the defending cup champion Vegas Golden Knights, 38-25-7. Can you imagine if I had sat here a year ago and told you that the Predators were going to have 88 points, Vegas was going to have 83 points? Unbelievable. We start with the coach's take, playing the defending cup champions. I know that on paper they're not as good as they used to be, but don't tell that to Andrew Burnett.
They're the Stanley Cup champions for a reason. This is the time of year where they play their best. We put a lot of work into all through the season to get an opportunity to play a Stanley Cup champion at home in a meaningful game. To me, that's excitement for our group. We feel energized, and we get an opportunity to play a big game against the best team in the league.
And they'll give it a go tonight. If you take a look at the standings inside the wild card, the Predators still comfortably, although, you know, again, I guess I said 83. That's what the sheet says, but it is 85 points for Vegas. So you're only three up on Vegas. But you're 8 points clear of a playoff spot with a game in hand on St. Louis. MoneyPuck.com gives you a 99.6% chance of making the playoffs. That feels pretty secure. The real question is, you're 5 points behind Winnipeg with 11 to play. Can you catch up? Not likely. But it's possible, and we'll keep our eye on that. And the one thing I keep my eye on is right now Vancouver is the number one seed in the Western Conference with 98 points, although Colorado at 97 has a game in hand. And I worry about that because, again, you want Vancouver to be the number one seed so that you draw into Colorado or Dallas, who will end up being the number two seed in the bracket. That's going to do it for us. Max is here with you. He will have the pregame show coming up next. The question is this: can they make it 18 straight with a point? Can they? Max says we, Ian. He says we. The pregame show's next. Stillman and Company. See everybody tomorrow at 2:00.